This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 16th of December 2016. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 15th of December 2016, which this week has been edited by Sue Frayne, Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas. Our readers today are Lynn Parker.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Peter Liddiard.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are: protest over city centre air quality, parking furore, and stalker lawyer to keep career. So we'll start with the story behind the first headline.
Protest over city centre air quality. The chronically filthy air of Winchester city centre has been highlighted by green campaigners. An estimated 150 marched through the city centre on Sunday, calling on the City Council to take action over air pollution. Organised by Winchester Friends of the Earth, many carried tombstones to represent the annual death toll of 51 people to which unclean air contributed. They demanded the City Council start to take the problem of air pollution seriously before even more people die. The Greens are angry that the council is poised to introduce a new parking strategy that sees new parking in the city centre. They started from the Discovery Centre, then marched down Jury Street and the High Street to the Guildhall before ending at the City Museum. Hazel Agamba, founder of the current branch of Winchester FOE, said, "We are delighted by the large number of people who turned out. We have been begging the council for 8 years to do more to reduce air pollution and protect the health of people in Winchester. Hopefully, this will give the council the jolt it needs." The pollution, caused mostly by road traffic, has been estimated by medical professionals to cause at least 40,000 early deaths per year in the UK. It is a major contributor to asthma and a significant contributor to heart disease, cancer and dementia. FOE points out that the council has failed in its duty to reduce air pollution below legal levels for the last 7 years, as stipulated by its own air quality management plan. Instead, FOE says it has pursued policies to increase traffic and not done enough to encourage walking and cycling. Councillor James Burns, the portfolio holder for transport, says he has to balance the environment with the economic vitality of the city centre. The Business Improvement District has been pressing for new parking to replace the loss of the Friarsgate multi-storey car park, which closed earlier this year. Three city councillors on the Overview and Scrutiny Committee on Monday outvoted a Lib Dem proposal for a tougher policy on air quality. Councillor Martin Todd proposed that it should be compulsory for all council proposals to report on their air quality impact. He also proposed that the council's new air quality action plan, due in March 2017, should have sufficient measures to cut pollution to safer levels by 2020. Councillor Todd said, "Again and again, the Conservatives running the council have ignored air quality. It happened with Station Approach, it happened with the pollution patio in St George's Street, and it looks set to happen again with the proposed parking strategy. With 51 deaths a year in the Winchester district from air pollution, this can't carry on. We've got to make it impossible to ignore air quality in council plans, as well as making sure that next year's air quality action plan does enough to tackle it. That's what we proposed, and it's deeply disappointing, although not surprising, that the Conservatives voted it down."
Parking furore, or furore, whichever you prefer. Civic chiefs have come under fire for plans to increase car parking in Winchester at the same time as saying they want to cut pollution. City Council plans for easing congestion and improving air quality were met with opposition from environmental groups at a cabinet meeting. Councillor James Burns, portfolio holder for transport, said, "By providing more spaces around the city, we can take more vehicles off the road and have a positive impact on air quality." However, Chris Gillam of Winchester's Friends of the Earth said, "This parking strategy shows such a complete disconnect from reality that we wonder if parts of the council even talk to each other. It is an astonishingly bad paper in all respects. It contains hardly any meaningful evidence. Its analysis of data verges on ludicrous, and anecdote or silly prejudice informs much of the text." Chris Holloway, director of Winchester Action on Climate Change, said, "We are concerned about the tone of the report, which as a whole is seriously misleading." Liberal Democrat Councillor Lucille Thompson argued in favour of increased opening hours for park and ride to cut pollution. "A successful park and ride scheme is only successful if it works 52 weeks a year, 7 days a week," she said. "The council's parking strategy aims to provide spaces to sustain the long-term economic, social and environmental well-being of Winchester. The mid-term revamp of the council's parking strategy included a public consultation showing strong support for the aims of the strategy. Most debate has centred on the city centre, where there is a high demand for parking and many car parks are operationally full much of the time. The council's report recommends measures relating to the marketing, signing and pricing regimes of car parks, investment in parking facilities and promoting the use of ultra-low emission vehicles."
Stalker lawyer to keep career. Winchester barrister Jonathan Simpson has been allowed to keep his career after he was suspended for 12 months following an affair. Simpson and his wife Catherine were convicted in June of stalking involving serious alarm or distress. The victim cannot be named for legal reasons. The trial heard that his co-accused, his wife Catherine Simpson, described the mistress as a chavvy woman from Southampton and labelled her boyfriend a thug who should be kept in a cage. The pair sent lurid letters to the woman despite police warnings to stop. The 18-month affair has started after a chance meeting in Southampton Airport Apple Store, which ended with Mr. Simpson and the woman exchanging email addresses. The Bar Standards Board in London on Monday had to decide if Simpson should be struck off from being a barrister. Stuart Sampson from the board said, "Mr. Simpson was called to the bar in 1993. He is of previous good character. On June the 24th, he reported himself to the Bar Council that he had been recently convicted after trial for stalking involving serious alarm or distress. Mr. Sampson said it was quite clear that it has an adverse effect on the lady in question. Ian Stern, QC, representing Simpson, said that he felt a deep sense of shame, remorse and sorrow. He showed himself to be a successful, hard-working and able practitioner, respected by colleagues and trusted by judges. Mr. Stern drew attention to the sentencing judge's comment that Simpson was mentally unwell. The conviction doesn't involve an allegation of any physical contact, much less any violence. There is no suggestion of dishonesty." Mr. Stern added that the letters came about as a result of Mr. Simpson's distorted thinking. He said the restraining order imposed in December 2014 caused real anger in both Mr. and Mrs. Simpson, both of Clifton Terrace, who then focused on getting the order lifted. That is what the purpose of these letters was. That was obviously misguided, wrong and foolish, but that was his state of mind at the time. Mr. Stern said that Mr. Simpson found his arrest and court appearance to be a humiliating experience. And he added that Mr. Simpson and his wife's financial situation was desperate. The panel also heard Mr Simpson's wife Catherine, a property lawyer, also convicted in June, now faces a disciplinary hearing at the solicitor's regulatory authority in February. Handing down the suspension, Mr Rylance said, "We don't intend to disbar you. Your conduct, which has led you to this place, was disgraceful. But you have been punished for that. Our role is not to punish you again." Mr Simpson, who was present, admitted one count of professional misconduct. He was suspended for a year, cut to from 18 months, as he admitted the charge, self-reported to the Bar Standards Board, and demonstrated remorse.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Bushnell, Cyril Bushnell, on the 8th of December. Conchi, Bill Conchi, on the 7th of December, aged 88. Dolbear, Judith Mary Dolbear, in the Oak Haven Hospice, aged 86. Galpin, Alan Galpin, on the 6th of December, aged 73. Green, Doris Green, they hate her, on the 6th of December. Hague, Sheila Hague, on the 8th of December. Jones, Terry Jones, in hospital on the 4th of December, aged 73. Mole, Margaret Evelyn Rose Mole, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 6th of December, aged 85. Oliver, Doris Oliver, on the 6th of December, aged 94. Tompkins, Margaret Elizabeth Tompkins, known as Peggy, at Winchester Hospital, aged 89. West, Bob West, on the 6th of December, aged 79. And Gota, Peggy Gota, on the 6th of December, aged 80. And next we have Christian comment.
To give is better than to receive, by Rosemary A. Baker. Christmas is coming. There are just a few more shopping days and a bit more time for the parties before Christmas arrives. It's so close you can taste it and smell it, but it's not quite here yet. You may be shaking the boxes and feeling the packages, but it's not time yet to open them. As we wait for the time of revealing, we again listen to the words of the Old Testament prophets in our carol services. These words were spoken to people living in exile. The exiles were waiting expectantly, hoping against hope that their day of freedom would soon come. There are several mentions of healing the brokenhearted. The promise held out to us is this: God will restore to health a broken and fractured world. Yes, according to the prophet, God will bring good news to the oppressed, the brokenhearted, the captives and the imprisoned. And the news that comes to us is this: whilst Jesus took the first shift, he has passed on the mantle to us. We are his body, and as his body we carry with us this mantle of hope. When you're a child, Christmas is often about receiving gifts. We like to ask for big things: bikes, computers and iPods. No socks or underwear will do. But as we grow older and more mature, we discover that Christmas is also about giving. Better to give than receive, say the scriptures. Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, in an appropriately titled book, To Heal a Fractured World, says that the ones who are happy among us are the ones in whom the desire to give is stronger than the desire to have. As we journey through Advent, we bring our offerings of money, of talent and of time into the presence of God, and we dedicate them to the healing of our world. Throughout the year, we're called on to look outward and discern what God would have us do in response to the needs of the community and the world. It might not seem like much, But when we give, we know that God is present in the gift, bringing healing to those who are broken-hearted and hurting. Such gifts as these light the fires of the Christmas spirit in the hearts of those touched by God's love. While it is better to give than to receive, there are times and places when we stand in need of healing and wholeness. We've been called on by God to look outward and attend to the needs of others, but there's also a time and place to look within and discover the holes in our lives. A health problem or a broken relationship, loneliness or financial difficulties, it doesn't matter what it is, when we're broken we seek to be made whole. Now Jesus didn't heal everyone who was physically, mentally or spiritually broken, and the world is not yet free from disease, hunger or violence. So what kind of healing can we expect? I once heard a good definition, one that might be useful to us. Curing is bringing back to normal. Healing is bringing back to balance. Healing can take place even as we find the strength to endure, the ability to overcome and a sense of purpose. Now, as we wait for God's healing presence to be revealed to us in the one who is lying in a manger, we stand ready to walk in a new direction. We stand ready to minister to our community so that its brokenness might be healed.
Next, we have the letters to the editor. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860 836, that's 01962 860 836. You can email letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Not surprisingly, the letters this week are dominated by planning issues.
And the first such letter about planning issues is from Mary Martin, and it's headed Time to Negotiate. Sir, one of the many problems with the failed brief for station approach to redevelopment was that designs were restricted to looking at council-owned land and buildings. So the large, ugly and underused Newborough House was retained, whilst the far more attractive Register House was set to be demolished. Equally, the vacant or part-used office buildings at the bottom of Andover Road were ignored, whilst large new office buildings were proposed which overwhelmed the station building. I suggest the City Council should now negotiate with Ministry of Defence to acquire and redevelop the Newborough House site and engage with the owners of the empty offices in Andover Road with a view to refurbishing them or redeveloping the sites. Then the tree-lined approach to the station and Register House, which makes such a positive contribution to the area, can be saved. That's from Mary Martin, Cranworth Road, Winchester.
And on the same subject, Chris Higgins writes, and it's headed Glimmers of Hope. Sir, in last week's report, Chronicle December the 8th, scrutinising the failed station approach project, I accused the City Council of conducting a whitewash. The public needs to understand why. Despite a lengthy paper claiming that lessons had been learnt, the following facts were conveniently omitted. 1. Advice from well-informed, experienced practitioners was mostly ignored in preparing the brief. 2. The Council's brief was not even financially viable. 3. The expensive legal advice was counterproductive, their terms and conditions were intimidating, and the procurement method proved to be disastrous. 4. It was unprecedented for 3 out of 5 architects to withdraw from the competition, although the officers reported otherwise. 5. The car parking requirements were environmentally unsustainable. 6. The design jury's original report was censored by Winchester City Council. 7. The jury were recalled and pressurised to reconsider their conclusions. 8. The scoring system was flawed and used by the officers to overturn the jury's decision. 9. This abortive exercise has wasted some £400,000 of public money, plus an estimated £250,000 worth of architectural time. The officers managing the process tried to justify their actions rather than apologise for these dreadful misjudgments. But there were two glimmers of hope. Having been impressed by Design Engine's contribution, Councillor Todd suggested that it would be a travesty if their expert knowledge and analysis of the site was not used in some way to take the project forward. The jury also generously offered to help Winchester City Council improve the brief. If the council really do wish to learn the important lessons from this scandal, they should take up both of these constructive proposals. If they choose not to, then the officers responsible will be demonstrating that their desire to maintain control of a project that they have already badly mishandled is stronger than their wish to listen to the informed wisdom of experts. How can the public have any confidence in the Cabinet or the officers in charge if they allow this to happen? And that's from Chris Higgins, Edgar Villas, Winchester.
And a third letter on the similar subject. Look for beauty. Sir, if the Secretary of State for the Environment is prepared to support the planning policy of permitted development, a mechanism by which individuals and organisations can undertake certain development without planning permission, then she should also strongly consider a further policy which demands that the key infrastructure decision makers at Network Rail, in particular the ones who thought the recent car park extension at Winchester's rail station was a good idea, are made to undertake a compulsory intensive course in beauty. I'm not thinking that they should learn how to do their makeup. I'm talking about Ms. Ledsam creating a policy to send them all away to places where they can experience beautiful things, a walk in a nice park, a visit to one of our finest National Trust properties, bird watching at an RSPB nature reserve, that sort of thing. Hopefully, some of the experience will rub off in a positive way and they will think twice about their responsibilities to the appearance and well-being of our city environments. Well, it's obviously too late for Winchester Station. That has now been vandalised successfully by Network Rail on three successive occasions: car park extension east side, bridge crossing, car park extension west side. But perhaps, with the Secretary of State's intervention, the rollout of these bland and meaningless structures, apparently intended to make our lives better, can be halted before more corners of our towns and cities are irreparably vandalised by these thoughtless people. And this was from Rod Graham, Director, Design Engine Architects, Coker Close, Winchester.
This letter is from Brian Laming, City Councillor for Badger Farm and Oliver's Battery, and it's entitled Warning Signs. Sir, it is with much regret that I continue to read acrimonious letters from Conservative City Councillors about each other. Some Conservative councillors don't seem to accept that the Silver Hill project failed. A judicial review found against the council and an independent review set out the council's shortcomings in project management. On top of this, station approach has had to be restarted, again because of project management failings. Here, even the architect has publicly explained that the problems which led to the failure of the original scheme were with the way it was dealt with by the council. But the Conservative administration still refuses to listen. The replacement for River Park Leisure Centre is the next major project for the city. Will this fail as well? The warning signs are beginning to show, even with several councillors actively trying to make it succeed. Isn't it about time that this Conservative council starts listening to local residents and local city councillors to get the best outcome for the city rather than fighting between themselves? That was from Brian Laming, City Councillor for Badger Farm and Oliver's Battery, Wheatland Close, Badger Farm.
This letter is from Ian Shankland. Development is not sustainable. Sir, re Eastleigh Borough Council's forthcoming public meeting about their local plan this evening in Hedge End, the government's national planning policy framework insists above all on sustainable development, primarily to generate economic growth. It is against this and the Quango's estimated housing needs figures that Eastleigh's local plan will be examined. An assumption these houses are specifically for local people is false. Most are for the open market and relatively few will be affordable. Shortly after Twyford Downlink and the Newbury Bypass were completed, the government conceded that building more roads only creates more road traffic and further new road building was curtailed. Likewise, building more open market houses in one area draws in wealthier people to buy them. Land has gone. Local needs remain. The authorities must realise, but not care, that this won't resolve the shortage of housing for locals. Surely this kind of development is unsustainable. That's from Ian Shankland from Colden Common.
And now we have another query. No change at site. Sir, I have been asked a few times about future plans for the St Clement's surgery. The first point I've made is that, as far as the practice itself is concerned, there is no change in the status quo and no immediate plans to redevelop the property. One of my concerns in recent years was that the new surgery was never going to be ready before Henderson would have wanted to demolish the old one. The position of the practice is now much more secure. If it takes another decade to build a new surgery as a result of the deal just done, the practice now has the legal right to stay put. Hopefully, the new surgery will open a lot sooner, but that much is in the hands of the City Council. As regards future plans, all we want to happen is for the surgery to form part of a series of master plan schemes which enhance the heritage of the city. The overall concept needs to be excite, the architecture needs to stimulate, and without wanting to be at all prescriptive, the only thing I would argue against now is another car park bang in the centre of the city. Silver Hill is not the place for a car park, but for a distinctive civic development of exceptional quality, the cultural and economic benefits of which would radiate across the whole district. And this is from Kim A. Gottlieb, City Councillor for Alresford and Itchen Valley.
Unremitting mess, writes Stuart Kaya. Sir, I have been catching up this weekend on a few months of unread chronicles. And the speed read caused me to reflect on what an unremitting mess Winchester seems to be in with respect to every key facet of being a functional, thriving city. The dramatis personae involved in a number of the more high-profile events, spats and name-calling of the period, would do credit to any pantomime script. Since we now have people taking to the streets to promote this or that agenda, might I suggest that we need what used to be called a good constituency MP to take us through the next 10 years? The decisions faced locally are really quite pivotal and will provide a lasting legacy for those who shape those decisions. Recent democratic events suggest that if the collective will is that we need a man in a white suit candidate, then we can install one in a single electoral cycle. I, for one, draw no comfort from Mr. Brine's career aspirations or ministrations in London, given the seriousness and lasting impact of getting it so horribly wrong locally. Winchester used to be a capital city, and 30 years ago was a capital city to live in. I think we should now demand that our senior political representative helps a drive to restore that status and provide the local head-banging skills that would appear to be missing from the local political mix. We can then confine the panto to the Theatre Royal. That strong letter, is from Stuart Kaya, Courtney Road, Winchester.
The next letter is not about the development of Winchester. And it's written by Norma Goodwin. And it's headed, Improve Service. Sir, Lloyd's Pharmacy took over all of Sainsbury's pharmacies in October, and this has been detrimental for customers of our Badger Farm store, with long queues forming because there are less staff employed. Many people waiting are elderly or disabled, and there is only one chair on which to sit. Yesterday, after queuing for 10 minutes, I was told the prescription they had received 3 days earlier had not been dispensed because there was a week's backlog. The service could be made more efficient if customers just wanted to hand in their prescription, could post them in a box. Also, I am sure the retrieval system could be streamlined because staff searching for a dispensed prescription have to go through a long process to find it. That is from Norma Goodwin, Mumford Road, Oliver's Battery, Winchester.
And now we are on to the hospital. Too little space. Sir, having just visited the Royal Hampshire County Hospital for routine blood tests, I parked on the top floor of the multi-storey car park and had so much difficulty in getting out of my car, as the adjoining car was rather close to the dividing white line, that I decided to measure the width. I happened to have a tape measure in the car. I found that instead of the standard 2.4 metres width, which is the norm, the parking places are 4 inches narrower at 2.3 metres. Given that many visitors are elderly and often lacking in mobility as I am, this seems very penny-pinching. Because of the queue at the payment kiosk, I overran my free half hour by a couple of minutes and ended up paying £1.50. I noted that the system gives another half hour free once you have booked out. So I know what to do next time if there is a little bit of delay for a blood test in the pathology department, which is very near the car park. And this was written by K.L. Webb, Quarry Road, Winchester.
Right, we now move on to the items of historical interest, and we have them from 200, 100, 50 and 25 years ago.
And this first one is from 200 years ago, December the 16th, 1816. The headline is Weather Forecast. Excellent as the barometer confessedly is for prognosticating changes in the weather, it has been suggested that much surer indications may be drawn from the horseleech, kept in a large phial, three parts full of clear spring water, in a room at a distance from the fire. In fair and frosty weather, it lies motionless and rolled up in a spiral form at the bottom of the glass. But prior to rain or snow, it creeps up to the top. Should the rain or snow be likely to be accompanied by wind, it darts about with amazing celerity.
Well, this is from 100 years ago, that's December the 16th, 1916. And the heading, slightly amusingly, I think, is Hide in the Dark, and it's H-Y-D-E. Sir, some 2 weeks ago I read in your paper that it was the intention of the authorities to moderately increase the lighting arrangements of the city. And I note that this has been done in some parts, but the residents of Hyde Street are patiently waiting to know when the same favour is likely to be extended to them. At the present time, there is absolutely no light at all in the whole street, whilst its low-lying position and the tall buildings on either side tend to so increase the darkness that the street is positively dangerous. And the residents feel justified in asking why they are left to grope around in Egyptian darkness when four lamps can be lit in the space of 50 yards in front of the Guild Hall.
Now we have information from 50 years ago, December the 17th, 1966. But unfortunately, they seem to have the same problems then that we have now. Traffic problems. Mm. Everybody has different ideas about solving Winchester's traffic problem, but whatever is done has to be bold, and a look might well be taken at nearby Salisbury. Salisbury's square grid iron pattern of streets is similar in many ways, and the approach to the problem has been forthright. One-way streets keep traffic flowing. Half the traffic lights in use are at pedestrian crossings. What a blessing. And only last week, a £5 million scheme for an inner distribution road was announced. Winchester needs such a traffic management scheme quickly.
And 25 years ago, December the 13th, 1991, police warning. Police morale could be affected if industrial action by Winchester prison officers continues for a long time. Since last Friday, members of the Prison Officers Association have refused to admit prisoners over a 475 limit. The Prison Officers Association took the decision to step up its industrial action following the failure of talks. Remaining prisoners are having to be locked in police custody cells in Alton, Shirley, Fratton, Farnborough and Havant. Inspector Barry Jakeman said Hampshire Police could cater for a maximum of 40 prisoners. He said, "The figures vary from day to day. At the moment we have 16 and more are coming in."
Next, we have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment. That will be followed by Letter from Westminster by Steve Brine, and then we will have First Person. So we start off with a Chronicle comment.
Thank you, and the heading is "The Choice Between Cars and Clean Air." The debate over the impact of cars in Winchester has been a political hot potato for at least 50 years. At first, the city was expected to adapt to the car, but in the 1970s, that attitude started to change and major road widening schemes such as North Walls and Eastgate Street were dropped. In the 1990s, the wheel turned further and we saw policies to restrict unfettered access and also the development of park and ride. Now, Councillor James Burns, portfolio holder for traffic, is proposing to create more parking in the city centre, a partial turning back of the clock. His new stance sparked the demonstration on Sunday, reported on page 4 of the Hampshire Chronicle. More than 100 people highlighted the council failure to hit its targets in an air quality management plan. Technically, the council could be prosecuted for this. Exactly how the council can pursue two seemingly contradictory policies at the same time has not been explained. It should be. The fact is that the days when motorists were the primary consideration should be long gone. Winchester Business Improvement District has been lobbying for more parking, saying businesses have been affected by the lack of parking. Before this assertion is taken seriously, there should be proper research into whether it is true and not just anecdotal complaints.
And now we have the letter from Westminster. Christmas is the one time of year when an MP's mailbag slows a little, and I must admit, I am looking forward to some time with the family and a period of reflection after what has been an extraordinary year. Events across the pond seem momentous, but the truth is nobody knows right now what President Trump will bring to the world or America's relationship with Britain. What I do know is we must work with him, and front of the line is a heck of a lot better than back of the queue. The outgoing US administration has begun discussion with senior UK officials about how they might pursue a trade agreement following Britain's exit from the EU. And so to Brexit, which, as well known, was not my choice or that of many people in the district. For all the prophets of doom, what happens next in Britain is yet to be written. Brexit is not, as some of its more vocal supporters say, a confirmed path to prosperity, nor is it a guaranteed disaster. Whether we sink or swim depends how the British government, current and future, manage the negotiations to make a success of the different path this country has chosen. As I said in the summer, given the large number of my constituents that commute to the city every day, I want to ensure London remains the powerhouse of our economy. You can view it through whatever lens you like, hard, soft, red, white or blue. But ultimately, we want to give Britain British companies the maximum freedom to trade with and operate in the single market and let European businesses do the same here. The House of Commons voted by a huge margin last week to get on with Brexit on the published timetable. We are going to make a success of Brexit, and our vision for Britain outside the EU is clear: a fully independent sovereign country. We will work hard to get the best deal, one that is unique to Britain and not an off-the-shelf solution. We will decide for ourselves how we control immigration, and that should be what our economy needs, not what the tabloids say. We will stay focused on how we get the best outcome for our country. That means getting on with developing our negotiating strategy and not putting all our cards on the table. We will respect and consult with Parliament, but we won't gift our EU partners the chance to give us the worst possible deal by promising a second referendum. It is very easy to despair at times, and 2016 has certainly tested our resolve, but I think we've much to celebrate as this year of change concludes. The unemployment rate in my constituency is among the lowest in the land. Disposable income sits at a record high, crime at a record low, and we live in a part of the world that is truly blessed. Even in prosperous Hampshire, however, this job serves as a constant reminder that Christmas is not a time of plenty for everyone, and more than ever at this time of year, I try to keep in mind the things I take for granted someone else is praying for. I wish all readers a Merry Christmas. Steve Brine, MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford.
And first person is written by Carly Deziz, and his headline is 2016, a very strange year. It's been a funny old year. It started with much promise. In business, we entered 2016 full of hope. Things had picked up and we desperately wanted it to continue. It did, but only for a couple of months. By March, the wheels were falling off as nervousness entered the markets and people and businesses stopped spending. None of this was helped by the doomsayers predicting hellfire and damnation if the British electorate had the temerity to vote to leave the EU. Like many, I was a waverer. Unlike many, I am old enough to have voted the last time we were given a say, when Harold Wilson was PM and the country voted overwhelmingly for in. Decades later, I wasn't so sure. Neither leavers nor remainers helped themselves nor us, the electorate. Reasoned argument was replaced by fear-mongering as our betters decided that we, poor loves, were incapable of understanding rational discussion. The CBI, among others, weighed in on the side of Remain, predicting plague, pestilence, and the slaughter of the firstborn if we were to leave Europe. But leave we did. And guess what? We're still here. The markets didn't like it at first. The pound dived against both the dollar and the euro, but then strangely started to rise again against the predictions of Remainers, now dubbed by some the Ramoners. There has been a discernible uptick in business confidence. The last time there was a shift of this kind was when we left the exchange rate mechanism in 1992, and business boomed then too. Let's hope it continues. All this has been taking place against a backdrop of the most curious presidential election result in the history of the USA. An apparent buffoon, with a scatological turn of phrase, at times sexually deviant, sometimes bordering on the incestuous, will, unless something unthinkable happens, enter the White House in January and have his finger on the nuclear button. How has this come about? Well, it turns out that the Democrats in the shape of Hillary Clinton managed to lose the election rather than Trump win it. Why was Mrs. Clinton the preferred candidate when she was so obviously a poor campaigner and was clearly disconnected from key sectors, notably women? The Clintons apparently had control of the Democrat donor base and threatened to trash the careers of anyone who got in their way. And so it is that we have ended up with a mendacious clown as leader of the free world. There have been two new concepts launched this year: populism and JAM. Now, JAM first. This is the political slogan latched onto by our imagination-challenged political classes. In recent years, we had hard-working families, a phrase first coined by the hapless Gordon Brown, whose economic policies compared unfavourably with the management of a whelk stall. Soon, every politician, not just the Labour ones, felt obliged to dedicate every policy to hard-working families, as if they'd only just discovered the condition of most people who vote for them. This year we have the JAMs, J-A-Ms, those just about managing. May I humbly add another, this one for the politicians themselves, JAMs, but with two M's on the end, just about mismanaging. And JAMs are on our doorstep. In Winchester, we have seen debacles such as the Silver Hill and Station Approach. Let's hope for a resolution in 2017, but I'm not holding my breath. There is now such a disconnect between the ruled and the ruling that the latter have started explaining away bizarre political events at home and abroad as the rise of populism. Well, if populism is the name given to a result you don't like, brought about by ordinary people exercising their democratic right, then let's have more of it. So, in 2017, perhaps our politicians will do less posturing and allow us to lead our lives as we wish to and not be hobbled by imposed ideology of whatever stripe. Merry Christmas.
There are no special announcements this week. For lighting up times, today, Friday the 16th of December, sunrise was just after 8 o'clock in the morning, and sunset will be at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Not much change for Wednesday of next week. Sunrise will be at 5 past 8 in the morning and sunset at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you yourself have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. We now continue with items of general news interest, and we start with an article by the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle concerning press freedom.
Yes, it's headed "Free Speech Faces Dangerous Threat." It's written by Ian Murray. As John said, he's editor of the Hampshire Chronicle and the Daily Echo in Southampton. And he was also, for those who attended, the speaker at our last AGM. And very entertaining he was. It has been a fairly typical few weeks for the Hampshire Chronicle. The paper, in print and online, has reported on a variety of items. We reported on the surge in car crime across the district, up by more than 1,000% on the same period last year. The Chronicle reported on the two car crashes in which elderly drivers crashed into buildings, the campaign for safety improvements at the Cars and Horses Junction, and the twists and turns of Station Approach. We've reported on festival events across the area, including Christmas lights switch-on, Santa races and charity fundraisers. In sport, we have covered the highs and lows of local grassroots teams, and as always, we have provided a platform for those who just want to have a say with our bulging letters pages. We campaigned, we supported, we delved, we probed, we reflected. In short, just another week in the life of a local newspaper. And whether you read us every day in paper or online or come to us just occasionally or seek us out just when you need us, I would say that your local paper fulfills its important role in helping to provide the glue that knits together our communities. You would, I contend, miss us if we were gone. And that is a very real risk. Thanks to what is called Section 40. Now, it sounds very bland, but it is in fact the most dangerous threat to independence, indeed the very existence of local newspapers in this country, for 300 years. I have written about Section 40 before. It is a clause that could become law if enacted by the government as an addition to the Crime and Courts Act 2013. Put simply, Section 40 means that if anyone takes a paper to court for libel, breach of confidence, misuse of private information, harassment, malicious falsehood or slander, even if they lose, then the paper will have to pay all of their costs as well as their own. It means that anyone who bears a grudge against this paper or any other can simply keep taking them to court over spurious matters, even in the knowledge they cannot win, and bleed us dry. Either the paper will have to restrict its reporting to check presentations, nativity photographs, or there are a few politicians who might applaud that, or we would sink under an avalanche of legal fees. Of course, it is dreadfully, patently unfair and indeed unjust. So why, in a free democracy, are the press facing such threats? The answer lies in the fallout from the Levinson inquiry and the need to create an independent press regulator. The press say we have created such a body in the Independent Press Standards Organisation, IPSO, which the bulk of newspapers have signed up to. The government has created a royal charter and recognised a body called Impress, funded and supported by one man, millionaire Max Mosley. Section 40 is a bid to force newspapers to join Impress, something we are unlikely ever to do. To come under the Royal Charter means giving power over to what can and cannot be published in the press over to politicians at Westminster. Too many people have fought and died over 300 years to prevent that from ever happening for this generation, including myself, to give way to bully boy tactics now. But all is not lost. The government is keen to ensure it does not act rashly, and the Secretary of Culture, Media and Sport, Karen Bradley, and the Home Secretary, Amber Rudd, have announced a public consultation on what should happen next. Their fingers are poised over the button, ready to enact Section 40, but we can still persuade them that free speech is more important than revenge, with your help. Which is why I am asking everyone who values their local paper, even if at times you do not always agree with what we say or do, take the time to visit the consultation website and register your thoughts. Naturally, I hope you will support this paper and the continued freedom of the press in this country, and that you will register your belief in the value of the local press in our communities. I thank you in advance for that support. I can, however, assure you of one thing. No matter what the outcome of the consultation, no matter what the decision by the government over Section 40, I and this paper will not be abdicating our duties in attempting to hold those in position of authority to account.
Post office to move soon. Sutton Scotney Post Office is set to move premises despite concerns the relocation will be further from the village centre on a busy main road and with no road crossing. The post office has agreed to relocate to the Texaco fuel station on Bullington Lane at a date to be pronounced. As previously reported, it was announced the branch was to move premises after the owner quit the service, claiming she was given no other option. Hayley Forsyth had co-owned Diva Stores for 8.5 years. However, when approached by the post office to provide the service on a commission basis, Ms. Forsyth declined. At the time, she said, "On a commission basis, we will be making £2.50 per hour. I had no choice but to let it go. They forced me into a corner." However, the business was paid a redundancy package, which Ms. Forsyth said would be used to revamp the store. The post office decided to hold a public consultation over the summer in regards to the relocation. The main feedback related to the proposed relocation, which was said to be further away from the heart of the village on a main road and with a lack of road crossing. In response, the post office said that for some customers, the new branch may be closer. The new operator is in discussion with the relevant authorities to seek the provision of a pedestrian crossing on the A30 near the new premises. Chairman of Wanston Parish Council, Lucy Dowson, said, "We are absolutely delighted. We're really pleased that the post office have got a commitment to provide a service in Sutton Scotney with the longer hours benefiting residents and members of the community. We had concerns with access to it because part of the road is busy, but the post office don't see it as a problem. And the people at the village shop were very keen to offload the post office as they want to expand their shop. Service will be available Monday to Friday between 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. and on Sunday from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. Susan Richardson, Regional Network Manager, said, "We are confident that this vibrant new style post office at the heart of the local community will meet customer needs. This modernisation is part of a major investment programme, the largest in the history of the post office, and will secure services for the future."
Police warn shoplifters, "We're watching you." Winchester BID, or Winchester BID, work closely with the police, who are sending out a Christmas message this year to warn shoplifters, "We're watching you." Police in Winchester are stepping up patrols and cracking down on shoplifting over the festive season. Officers will be carrying out both plain-clothed and high-visibility patrols in the city. Police have also carried out an operation where a plain-clothed officer went into shops and took items without paying. On several occasions, the officer was spotted by staff, and where he wasn't spotted, the officer returned to the shop with the goods to tell them what had happened and offer advice on how to spot a shoplifter and prevent thefts. Sergeant Matt Fancett said, "We want would-be thieves to know that we will be out and about keeping an eye on all the shops and shoppers. We continue to work with Winchester BID, Winchester City Council and local businesses through the Shop Watch scheme. This scheme makes it easier for us to deal with ongoing incidents whilst on patrol. We also work closely with the wardens and street pastors to address issues and support each other during the busy run-up to Christmas. With our extra patrols, we want to keep the city centre safer for everyone, and we hope both retailers and shoppers have a good Christmas shopping experience. And our message to criminals thinking of coming to Winchester to commit crime this Christmas is this. We'll be out and about in the city centre throughout the festive season, sometimes in uniform and sometimes undercover. So just remember, just because you can't always see us, it doesn't mean we're not watching you."
Demands to change junction. More than 1,000 people have backed a petition to changes in a Hampshire road junction, writes Andrew Napier. the demand for improvements to the A33B3047 junction at Kingsworthy near Winchester has now topped four figures and is increasing daily. It follows the death last month of pedestrian Jonathan Whitfield, 21, from Cheriton, near the junction last month. Campaigners are calling for an immediate reduction in the speed limit from 50 to 40 miles per hour and the introduction of a roundabout or traffic lights. They say recent changes designed to improve safety and traffic flow have confused many drivers and so made the junction even more dangerous. It is an accident black spot, with users of the junction expressing severe concerns. Some take considerable detours to avoid having to negotiate the junction. City Councillor Malcolm Prince said, "Most of the people making the decision about the junction don't use it, and we must take note of those that do." Councillor Jackie Porter, who sits on both the city and county councils, added, "Please, Hampshire County Council, just make the decision now and reduce the speed limit to 40. It was the original plan for the junction, so do it." Jill Prince and David Limonth presented the petition arranged before Mr. Whitfield's death. The driver of a Ford Cougar, a 45-year-old man from Chandlersford, was uninjured in the accident.
Covert Project Go Ahead. The transformation of one of Winchester's historic gateways is to go ahead with a smaller investment than planned. The next stages of the St Maurice Covert Project were initially going to cost £170,000, with £30,000 coming from the Town Forum account. However, the City Council has now agreed to match fund Winchester Town Forum's contribution up to £50,000. Ahead of the decision, Deputy Leader Councillor Victoria Weston reiterated her support for enhancing the gateway. She said, "I would like to see this project take off. The whole high street could have a completely different nature if the place was cleaned up." But Councillor Ian Tate, who has been a long-term campaigner for improving St Maurice's Covert, said, "It is very important and a protected space that has been consisted. It is a very important and protected space that has been neglected consistently." At Winchester Town Forum, Councillor Weston had expressed her concern over the funding of the project, saying that savings needed to be made. As part of a series of measures to enhance the commercial centre of the city, Winchester Town Forum allocated a budget to improve the presentation of St Maurice's Covert on the High Street. The covered passageway links the High Street with the Wessex Hotel and the public toilets at Market Lane. Designers Scott Whitney Studio have explained their bold vision, which includes the covered having a clean floor which is sandglassed, create new lighting and provide a better link between the High Street and the Cathedral.
Top honour. Tributes have been paid to one of Winchester's best known people. Richard Steele has stepped down after 25 years as chairman of St John's Winchester Charity, the provider of homes and care for the elderly. He has served as a trustee for 28 years. A retirement party was held last Thursday at the Guildhall. Mayor Jane Rutter was there, along with many trustees, past and present, and almshouse residents and staff. Mr. Steele is known to thousands of people as a long-serving undertaker based in the city centre. Speeches were made by the mayor, then Martin Lowry, St John's Vice Chairman, and finally Mr. Steele. Gifts were a painting of Northside Almshouse by Winchester artist John Bulford. The eldest almshouse resident, Lewis Pennycook, presented a picture book filled with various St John's charity events. Mr. Pennycook will be 100 on December the 21st and still lives independently. And many listeners will know that, in fact, where I'm speaking from, where we're all speaking from at the moment, is in the premises of Richard Steele and Partners, who have provided us with our studio for 5 or 6 years, I think it is now. And so every recording you get, whether it's the newspaper or the monthly magazine, is recorded from this room.
Fireman rescuers praised. Four people who helped a burning homeless man have been recognised by the fire service. The man attempted to take his own life by setting himself alight in a sleeping bag. Four passers-by stopped to help, removed the sleeping bag and called 999. Darren Wright, Heather Ross, Thomas Slater and Emma Rowden did not know the victim, but their actions saved his life. Chief Officer Dave Curry said all four responded instinctively to a vulnerable person, placing themselves at considerable risk. Their selfless, coordinated action saved his life. The four were awarded the Chief Officer's Letter of Appreciation. After the rescue, Emma and her boyfriend Thomas, Heather and Darren went for a walk to come to terms with what happened, said a Trinity spokesman. The victim was a frequent user of Trinity Winchester, the day centre for homeless and vulnerable people in Winchester. Sue McKenna, operations director, said, "We were incredibly shocked when we heard what they tried to do and just so grateful that people stopped to come to his aid."
Centre invites children to help the elves. Children in Winchester have had the chance to become Santa's little helpers at the Brook Shopping Centre this festive period. Over three consecutive Saturdays, children were allowed to try out Christmas gifts when Santa toy testers returned to put this year's top Christmas toys through their paces. The children put on white lab coats and played with toys from top retailers in the centre, such as Argus, The Entertainer and Waterstones.
Entrepreneur approach, key to city future. Civic chiefs have stressed the need for an entrepreneurial approach to improving Winchester in coming years. The City Council discussed a new asset management plan, which maps out new building projects and developments. The Council's current asset management plan, which expires this month, has seen a new depot built, whilst Hyde House, Abbey Mill and Avalon House have all been successfully refurbished and let. New challenges for the Council include the development of River Park Leisure Centre, repairs to the Council offices and improvement in the quality of multi-storey car parks in the city. The new plan will also determine the future for stalled developments, Station Approach and Silver Hill. These developments will require new sources of income to replace lost funding in other areas. The Council also discussed the new draft Council strategy, which will outline Council ambitions for 2017 to 2020. Council leader Stephen Godfrey stressed the need for the new strategy to have an entrepreneurial approach to delivering efficient public services. He said it's a very important document. The challenges in Winchester are very real. The new strategy aims to make the city a top business location, to deliver quality housing, to improve the happiness of the community, and to improve the environment. The draft strategy goes out to consultation until January the 13th.
Theft of paintings, a real zoo done it. More than £160,000 worth of wildlife paintings were stolen in a burglary at Marwell Zoo. Police are appealing for information after paintings by renowned wildlife artist Pip McGarry were stolen. Burglars broke into the gift shop of the Oslebury-based zoo sometime between 6pm on Thursday, December the 8th and 8:30am on Friday, December the 9th. They stole 10 paintings and a pencil sketch by Mr. McGarry, who is the artist in residence and has a gallery there. The paintings are valued at £164,000, with one, entitled Young Snow Leopard, being valued on its own at £34,000. £34,000, yes. Mr. McGarry told the Chronicle, "It's pretty shocking. It's 37 years of paintings, and never has anything like this happened before. I am astonished, and the thieves have gone to such lengths. A proportion of the sales at Marwell go to protecting endangered species, so it's effectively like stealing from a charity. I'm trying to be practical about the future in terms of that it may affect the future of the gallery," he added. Detective Constable Alex Hall said, "I'm appealing for anyone who knows the whereabouts of these valuable works of art to contact me. These paintings represent a considerable amount of work for the artist, who is devastated by their loss. Additionally, the sale of these paintings would have benefited the zoo, as a proportion of any sale is donated to them. The fact that nothing else was stolen would indicate that the thieves targeted the artwork and broke in specifically to steal it, perhaps with a buyer already lined up. Anyone with information about the burglary or where the paintings may be is asked to call Detective Constable Hall in the Basingstoke-based Northern Investigation Team on 101. And this article is accompanied by four illustrations of the artworks concerned. There's a magnificent painting of a very large elephant, a beautiful painting of a snow leopard, painting of another leopard, and then a painting of five ostriches running across a prairie.
Chairman ousted. The chairman of a Winchester Community Association has been ousted at its annual general meeting. Ron Fenich was voted out at the AGM of the Winnell Community Association last Wednesday. A new committee has been elected with a new chairman, Michelle Wall. Mr. Fenich had been chairman for around 3 years and had secured a grant of £140,000 from the County Council towards improvements at the centre on Garbutt Road. In October, Mr. Fenich received an award from Winchester University in recognition of his efforts. But members of the Winnell Social Club, based at the community centre, were unhappy with his chairmanship. A large number of social club members attended the AGM to vote against him. Lottie Forder, chairman of the 280-member club, said, "The vote was clear. We are relieved. A lot of people were worried the social club would close." Ms. Wall and Mr. Fenich were unavailable for comment yesterday as the Chronicle went to press.
Shared housing set to be curbed. New regulations to stop the unchecked expansion of shared housing on a Winchester estate could soon be introduced. It comes after the Chronicle reported how concerns have been growing that Winnell is becoming plagued with issues over more student houses. In May, Stanmore attained the protection of what is known as Article 4 Direction. This forces landlords to apply for planning permission before they can convert family homes into homes in multiple occupation, HMOs. Residents in Fiona Close in Winnell drew up a petition to protect their street after concerns over a planning application to convert one of the homes. Now the City Council says it's listening to the worries of residents and will introduce the same measure as in Stanmore. In the new year, the Council says it will look into the option of introducing an Article 4 direction in Winnell and any other areas of the city where there is information to suggest that increasing numbers of HMOs are causing an imbalance in the mix of housing. City Council portfolio holder for housing Caroline Horrill said, "HMOs provide an essential housing option for many residents in the city. However, the proliferation in numbers in any one area can have a significantly detrimental impact on communities, and I would support some control on the growth in numbers. The council will also be looking at introducing licensing of all HMOs to ensure they're well managed and the impact on neighbourhoods is minimised. Additional planning controls won't prevent individual applications or stop specific properties being converted to HMOs, nor should they. However, they could help to prevent numbers escalating too high and keep a balance to the city's traditional family housing estates. The issue has been caused by the massive expansion of Winchester University in recent years. And in spite of the building of new accommodation for students on Burma Road, with that increase has been a lack of enough new housing. No major estates have been built in Winchester since the completion of Badger Farm in the late 1980s. Excuse me. It means that many jobs in Winchester are filled by people who no longer live locally but commute from Eastleigh or Southampton, adding to congestion on local roads. The City Council now has a target of building 300 council homes in 10 years, and after 5 years is ahead of schedule. The Barton Farm development, also known as King's Barton, will be 400% affordable houses, 40% affordable houses, available for people on the City Council waiting list. That means around 800 homes will be available either to rent or with other ways such as shared ownership.
£21,000 aid from Friends to Hospital. The Friends of St Cross Hospital handed a cheque for £21,000 to the hospital trustees at a seasonal winter lunch held in the 100 Men's Hall, attended by some 40 members. The money was raised through subscriptions paid by the 700 plus members of the Friends and at a varied number of events held throughout the year. The increasingly popular Friends Summer Party in June raised over £6,500, and other events included the first Friends Carely, the January, the annual lecture presented by Friends Vice Patron Alistair Bruce, several coach outings, the annual concert, and a fifth anniversary gala dinner held in September. Some £15,000 of the sum donated was attributable to 2016, while the remaining £6,000 was held over from 2015. The money will support the hospital trustees' investment in new visitor toilets and other much-needed repairs to the fabric of the 880-year-old almshouse, the oldest in England. There's a picture in the article here, which shows Richard Chisnell, Friends Chairman, Sue Woodward, the Hospital Treasurer, Reg Sweet, Master of St Cross, and John Pringle, the Friends Treasurer. Further details about the Friends, together with the 2017 events programme, can be found on their website, www.friendsofstcross.com. And the Friends welcomes new members, and application forms can be collected from the Porter's Lodge at the hospital.
The snow patrol is ready to clear. Winchester BID has a team of snow shoveling heroes at hand, ready to act in the case of bad weather. These snow clearers aren't just the typical contractor, though the BID pay residents staying at Winchester Church's night shelter, who would like to help to keep the streets clear and snow-free over the winter period. This not only gives residents at the night shelter a short-term period of employment, but it also keeps our streets clear of snow and much safer to travel around, meaning that business can continue as normal, even in extreme weather.
33,600 pound lottery funding for Hyde 900 historical project. Hyde 900 has been awarded 33,600 pounds by the Heritage Lottery Fund for a program of activities and events next year. The money will help explain and interpret the history and site of Hyde Abbey, the final burial place of King Alfred the Great. It follows the 2014 BBC documentary The Search for Alfred the Great, which stimulated interest in the site of the abbey, which was dissolved on the orders of Henry VIII. Steve Marper, chairman of Hyde 900, said, "The increase in visitor numbers persuaded us that there needed to be more extensive explanatory material about both the abbey and the story of Alfred, whose remains were interred there in 1110. Plans are underway to develop both groundbreaking digital resources and more traditional material to help visitors, real and virtual, to gain better understanding of the construction and life of the abbey, as well as its role as a royal mausoleum and place of pilgrimage. There will also be lectures, arts activities, and educational material, as well as opportunities for volunteers in archaeology projects. The full programme will be announced in the new year and opens in March with the unveiling of a life-sized carving of Abbot Aston, the Abbey's most distinguished medieval figure." Edward Fennell, founder of Hyde 900, said, "Our aim is to establish Hyde Abbey permanently on the visitor trail for Winchester. This will complement the other exciting plans now afoot to celebrate Royal Winchester." Steve Bryan MP said, "Hyde 900 is one of the strongest community groups we have and protects the legend that is Alfred brilliantly. It was great to be able to support this bid, which I'm confident it will really add value to telling the story of his life and times in Winchester. Hyde 900 acknowledges the support given to its application by Nigel Atkinson, Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Mr. Bryan, City Councillor Fiona Mather, Hampshire Cultural Trust, Winchester City Council, St Bede School, Winchester University, and Cliff Bannister, Rector, and the United Benefice of St Bartholomew and St Lawrence with St Swithin upon Kingsgate."
City retailers rake in £105 million from tourists. Retailers in Winchester are gaining the most from tourists in the city, according to new research. Data analysis for the city has shown that retailers are now the most lucrative sector in terms of direct revenue from tourism. A survey released by Tourism South East looked at the effects of tourism on various sectors and concluded that the most significant growth has been in the retail sector, earning £105 million from visitors in 2015. Winchester City Council's portfolio holder for economy and estates, Councillor Steve Miller, said, "This data is significant as it directly links tourism spend to the city centre businesses. For years, there has been a debate about whether tourists actually spend money in the shops locally, and the survey backs up what the hotels and the Tourist Information Centre are saying. People come to Winchester to shop, eat and see visitor attractions, and the retail offer is absolutely key to staying visitors and day trippers alike. Since the partnership with South Downs National Park, Tourism South East and East Hampshire Businesses was established in 2011, and it is the shops in the city centre which appear to have been the major beneficiaries of the increased footfall. The rise in direct spend in this sector has risen from £61 million to £105 million.
Last-minute boost to the toy appeal. The Hampshire Chronicle's Christmas toy appeal to support local families has been given a boost in its last few days. A house-building company has given its support with a generous donation of toys to help families have a happier Christmas. Cara Homes put together the package worth £300. The appeal supports three local charities, Homestar, Basics Bank and Friends of the Family. The donation by Calor is part of the company's ongoing commitment to supporting the community in Winchester. Book Centre spokesperson Liz Marsden said, "I am so pleased that there will be additional involvement in the toy appeal, which the Book Shopping has supported over the last 3 years. The additional donations will make a real difference, giving joy and excitement over Christmas. We're proud to be a part of this project and look forward to next year." Operations manager at Winchester Basics Bank, Janet Crick, said, "We are so grateful to the Brooks and the Hampshire Chronicle for organising this collection of toys. There is still a little time to donate to the appeal. Simply take along an unwrapped toy to the collection point at Waterstones Book Shop in the Book Centre today." And there's a photograph of Rebecca Thompson and Lisa Painter with some of the toys donated to the Hampshire Chronicle Toy Appeal.
Praise for crash rescue heroes. Two men have been hailed as heroes after risking their own safety following a horrific crash that left two people with life-threatening injuries. Workmates Ross Baker and David Fielden were travelling home when they came across the aftermath of a head-on collision in which a 55-year-old woman and a 5-year-old boy were badly hurt. One of the people involved in the accident was cradling the child in his arms and pleading, "Help my boy." The injured woman and her male companion were trapped in the wreckage of their Renault Clio, which was about to burst into flames near Winchester. Mr. Fielden and Mr. Baker managed to rescue the couple after ripping open the doors. Mr. Baker ran back to their van and grabbed two fire extinguishers after smoke started billowing from the Clio's air vents. Mr. Fielden, 32, stayed with the injured boy, giving him emergency first aid and trying to keep him calm. The accident happened in Otterbourne Road, Shawford, on December the 7th. The boy was a passenger in a silver-coloured Citroen and the woman was a passenger in the other car. They were both taken to Southampton General Hospital with life-threatening injuries and were said to be in a serious condition. Commenting on the action taken by Mr. Fielden and Mr. Baker, the chairman of Compton and Shawford Parish Council, Mike Southgate, said, "They would appear to be heroes. We would also like to thank the emergency services and all the other people who went to the aid of those involved in the collision." Mr. Fielden and Mr. Baker, both from Southampton, were on their way home when they came across the accident and ran to help the injured. Mr. Fielden said, "A man sitting on the pavement had a child in his arms and was saying, 'Help my boy.' The little lad was conscious but had a really nasty laceration on his head. Two people were trapped in the other car. Smoke was coming from the vehicle and there was a strong smell of burning. Someone was trying to get them out but couldn't open the door, so I yanked it as hard as I could. Quite a few other people were involved as well. An off-duty doctor went round checking on everyone's condition and a lot of neighbours came out with towels, lights and chairs. I just did what I expect anybody else would do in the same situation. The real heroes were the police, the fire brigade and the ambulance people." Mr. Baker added, "As I leaned in to speak to the driver of the Clio, smoke started billowing from the air vents and I knew we had to get them out. Police are investigating the cause of the collision. The drivers of the two cars involved were both unhurt."
Grand reopening for jewellers. Family-owned Alsford Jewellers D. Barker and Son celebrated their recent refurbishment with a grand reopening at their West Street shop. The Mayor of Winchester, Jane Rutter, and her family paid the shop a visit. Liz Barker said, "We're delighted with the results. The shop is bright and fresh following our refit and we have had such wonderful feedback from our customers who were excited to see the new ranges we have introduced." Damon Barker added, "We were thrilled that so many customers chose to celebrate with us. They love the new look and we feel very lucky to have their continued support."
Public have input on derelict camp. Winchester residents were invited to shape the future of Bushfield Camp at a community consultation. The development of a former military base on the edge of Winchester, which has stood empty for 40 years, was discussed at a drop-in event at the Middlebrook Centre on Tuesday. The site comprises around 43 hectares, of which approximately 20 hectares were previously occupied by the military camp. The derelict ruins include the camp armoury, blast pens, a firing range and a number of other structures. Deloitte spokesman Matthew Wright said there are plans for a landscaped employment campus as well as nature conservation, although plans are still in the very early stage. He said the church commissioners, the landowners, are pleased to continue their engagement with the local groups and other stakeholders. Today's consultation follows a series of workshops, meetings and briefings with a range of interested parties. Over 4,500 letters were sent out to local residents and businesses inviting them to today's event, and we are very pleased with the response. The commissioners are still at a very early stage in this project, but wanted to hear the views of local people before any plans for the site's future are developed. The objectives for Bushfield are set out in local planning policy. The site allocation is clear that the site should be brought forward for employment uses, with approximately 20 hectares of land also put to public benefit. We will listen to the feedback received and use this to shape future proposals for the site in the new year. He added that development was important, especially after the collapsed developments at Silver Hill and Station Approach.
Students' Contest Hope. Top Winchester students have reached the national finals of a mathematics competition. Four students from Peter Simmons College won the regional final of the Hampshire Senior Team Mathematics Challenge. Alex Chamberlain, Aaron Freemantle, Josh Payne and Beth Thomas saw off the competition from 18 other teams at the event held at Alton College. The best maths students from county schools and colleges tackled demanding mathematical challenges for more than 3 hours. At the end of the three rounds of group problem solving, a team cross number puzzle, and a mathematical relay race, the team from Peter Simmons were declared victorious and will go on to compete in the national final in London on February the 7th. Principal Stephen Carville said, "I'm immensely proud of these students' tremendous achievements and wish them all the very best for the national final in February." Head of Maths at Peter Simmons College, Paul Watson, said, "The students worked really well as a team and excelled in the relay at the end of the competition. The challenge for 16 to 19-year-olds is now in its 11th year and attracts over 1,200 teams from schools and colleges from around the UK. It focuses on problem solving, teamwork and communication skills."
Silver Jubilee for Kitchen Firm. With Hampshire's largest kitchen showroom in Ropley and a boutique showroom in Winchester, Searle & Taylor is celebrating 25 years of designing and making kitchens. Managing Director Darren Taylor was 18 when he started the business, working with former partner Jeff Searle. Hand-making pined kitchens from a farm workshop in East Worldham near Alton, the company achieved word-of-mouth success and went on to make kitchens on a larger scale before developing into a retail business. It specialises in designing and making bespoke hand-painted kitchens.
Arts Complex Scheme to be revived at school. Plans for a controversial new arts complex at a Winchester College are being revived. Peter Simmons College are revisiting plans to build a new arts block after school governors decided that the college should apply for planning permission. The complex, originally placed along Hatherley Road, was not well received by neighbours, sparking widespread protests. As previously reported by the Chronicle, more than 150 residents had supported a letter asking for the college to rethink the proposal. The choice of this site also prompted a demonstration attended by more than 100 people last year. One issue was the new entrance on Cranworth Road, full flood. Residents were worried the number of students funneled down the street would prove a danger. Another issue was the loss of trees and the overbearing nature of the proposed buildings. Campaigners said they wanted to see the college redevelop the arts block within the existing cluster of buildings rather than expand across the playing fields. In response to the original proposal, Peter Simmons College set up a neighbourhood liaison group with the aim of fostering better relations between the college and its neighbours. The college had said they were looking at two alternative options, next to Falkland Lodge or in front of the Mercers Sports Hall. At a second liaison meeting, however, Peter Simmons Vice Principal Dave Cartwright said the college should apply for planning permission on the originally opposed site, according to local residents. Vice Principal of Peter Simmons College, Dave Cartwright, said, "We met with representatives from the planning department some time ago to discuss the possibility of building a new arts facility at the college. The Board of Governors has recently decided to proceed and seek planning permission to build a new arts facility. We provided members of the Neighbours Liaison Group, which met on November the 29th, a list of changes made to the original plans in response to comments from local residents, and we will be arranging a presentation for local residents in the new year to provide information." Adam Clark Williams said, "Those of us in Cranworth Road are, of course, horrified, despite all the reassuring noises we were treated to last time. So far, as I'm concerned, it remains the wrong building in the wrong place and we're not having it." Gunilla Jones, resident of Cranworth Road for more than 40 years, said, "We are horrified. There's 170 signatures from all of the roads saying we were all against it. We are hopeful that it could be stopped, as the college said itself that they don't want that site. We are all worried. We just don't understand it. We want some action." Speaking about the proposed site, she added, "It's the only green space we have in this area." The college has grown rapidly in recent years to have about 4,000 students who travel from as far as the Isle of Wight, Wiltshire, Sussex and Berkshire. The sixth form college says it needs to expand to cope with the rising number of students attending from across the region.
That concludes our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors, who were Sue Frayn, Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas. And thanks also to our various technical teams. And thanks to our readers, who were Lynn Parker.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Peter Lydiard.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. This will be our last edition for 2016, and on behalf of everyone at the Winchester Talking newspaper, we send our very best wishes for Christmas and the new year. The next edition will be recorded on Friday, the 6th of January, 2017. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.